Grief is a natural part of life, and we all experience it at some point. By becoming aware of our emotions in the process of grief, we can begin to accept and move through our pain. Acceptance doesn't mean that we forget or stop feeling the loss, but it allows us to come to terms with it. And finally, we can choose to honour our loved ones by celebrating their life and finding meaning in our grief. Join me as we explore these pillars of grief and how they can help us navigate the journey of grief. We will explore this journey together, and you will hear from experiencers, experts, and researchers. I'm Jock Brokas, and this is The Pillars of Grief. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you are in the world, this is Jock here, and this is The Pillars of Grief. Now, I've been involved in grief for many, many years, as a lot of you know. Ever since I was a young kid, I've been intimately acquainted with grief. And even recently, my wife and I lost one of our greatest friends, a woman that we love very dearly. And I was very lucky in my academic studies to attend a webinar by a lady by the name of Dr. Anne Bering, who's an absolutely fascinating lecturer and has studied spirituality and feminist spirituality for many, many years. And during this webinar, she talked about women and grief and historical aspects of women and grief. And I thought this would be a fantastic subject to bring for you, because I know that a lot of you out there are females that listen to this, and it's great to hear things about the afterlife and everything else from me, but this perspective I think is uniquely powerful. Are you struggling with grief? Hi, I'm Jock Brokas, a grief researcher, author, spiritual mentor, and renowned evidential medium. Join me on the Pillars of Grief podcast. Through personal teachings and interviews with experienced researchers and educators, I will provide valuable insights and support to help you navigate your journey through grief. I will answer the questions you yearn to be answered, and I'll help you understand your journey. Listen and subscribe to the Pillars of Grief podcast today on your favorite platform and start navigating your journey through grief. So please welcome to Pillars of Grief, Dr. Anne Bering. Anne, thank you for joining me today.
It's a very great pleasure, Jacques. Thank you so much for inviting me. And it's a most interesting subject that we're going to discuss. I'm very, very interested in that.
So let's talk a little bit about you, you know, because a lot of people out there that perhaps listen to this show don't actually know who you are and your work. So if you want to kind of give them the whole kind of, not the whole background, but, you know, the version that you most want them to hear about, let them know about you and your work.
Okay. Well, I'm English. I live near Winchester in England. I'm 92 years old. I've had a wonderful, extraordinary life. I'm both a Jungian analyst and a historian. I've written about 8 books, some with other people, some on my own. My major work was a book called The Myth of the Goddess, which was a study of the feminine principle from the Paleolithic era right up to the Virgin Mary. That was published in 1991, which is a long time ago. But I'm just reading it today because I'm trying to write another book, my final book, called The Holy Spirit, The Feminine Aspect of the Holy Spirit. And I need to return to people called the Gnostics to bring that into a chapter of this book. So I've explored many avenues. And this feminine interest, or interest in the feminine, started with a dream that I had of a great immense cosmic woman who was filling the space between earth and sky. I had that dream when I was about 45, so I'm now 50 years older nearly, and that dream has been the directive of my life, and a book that I wrote called The Dream of the Cosmos arose out of that book, which was called Dream of the Cosmos, A Quest for the Soul, because I thought the soul is so missing in our culture that if I can make some contribution to restoring it, that would be something that would be worthwhile. That took 20 years to write, that book, The Dream of the Cosmos. And The Myth of the Goddess took 10 years, and I wrote it with a great friend called Jules Cashford, who is still a friend and is still alive, although she's 10 years younger than me. So briefly, that's the story. And because I'm interested in women above all through history and have studied history right back to the Paleolithic, I knew that there was a point around the Bronze Age 2000 BC or BCE, when women really lost the role of being a priestess, and their role was completely taken over by a male priesthood of the three patriarchal religions that we have today, that is to say, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, where, or with the exception of Judaism, where there are women rabbis, and now in Christianity there are women priests. In Islam, there are no, as far as I know, except in the Sufi tradition, there are no women teachers or women priestesses. So this was a cause of great grief to women, because having been priestesses in all the temples of the goddesses in the ancient world, say in Greece, in Rome, and long before that in Egypt and in Sumeria, suddenly they found themselves with no temple to worship in, and no place to lead congregations in an aspect of life that they were experienced in, which was everything to do with relationships, the relationships of a woman to giving birth, bringing up a child, seeing it grow to maturity, the importance of that value, which was implicit in their very being and in their work as priestesses, went suddenly, just wasn't there anymore. So this was a cause of great grief, I think, going back 4,000 years, very long time, and we're only just beginning to recover it now, but woman has not recovered the role that she played as Sibyl, as priestess, as healer. She was always a healer, she was always a midwife, and as I said, she was a priestess. So this was, to me, a cause of enormous grief in the whole sort of vista of women's experience. And also her role as birth giver and birth nurturer and nurturer of new life on the planet. This has been completely marginalized and forgotten. And the role of man as sowing the seed in woman took precedence, so to speak. I had a fascinating email from a man, a doctor, who's now 80 and retired in America, who made the connection, which I haven't made, between between the community not knowing that man was involved in the creation of life, so that woman was seen as the sole creator of life, as say in the Paleolithic. And then in the Neolithic came the sowing of the seed in the ground, and then the connection was made with man as the sower of seed in woman, just as the sower of seed in the land. And I hadn't thought of that, and that was a brilliant comment that he made. We don't know exactly the time when people became aware that man's seed actually fertilized woman. We don't know that. It could have been any time between 20,000 BCE and I don't know what, really, but certainly.
Anne, can I just say that you shocked me when you said that you were in your 90s, because for a start, you look way younger than what you actually are. And so that really shocked me. And the fact that you've done this research, you mentioned something there about the grief that women feel because they were losing their place in society, or they were losing their place in their religion or their beliefs or what they were, you know, as beings who were creative, you know, mainly creative forces. Why do you feel that men disregarded them, the woman, as the creative force back in history? Why do you think man took over and disregarded the female power, if you like?
I tell you what took over. It took over when there was a change from the worship of the great mother around 2000 BC to the worship of the great father. That was a huge change. It took a long time to come, maybe 1,000 years. But originally, woman was seen, or rather the goddess or the great mother was seen as the womb of creation. Everything came forth from her womb. There was no separate creation, so that there was no separation between the creator and creation. Whereas when you have the great father myth, it's a different myth altogether, you have the separation of the great father up in the sky and creation down below, so to speak. It's a totally different cosmology, a totally different concept of divinity. And that is what changed everything, the move from the great mother to the great father. Instead of having the marriage between them going on as a couple, so to speak, so that the deity always was male and female, you had the movement from all female to all male.
That's crazy.
For instance, in Greece and Rome, there were gods and goddesses who married, and so there was a marriage there, and there was always a marriage in Egypt and in Sumer, but later on that marriage got dropped, and so you had the sole deity, the only god, so to speak, the only creator, and that was an enormous change. That's what I tried to explain in the lecture that you watched a week ago for the ALF Trust, which is now up on my website if people want to look at it. That's annebaring.com.
Yeah, we'll definitely put that in annebaring.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, Anne, for people that are interested, and to
gave the whole history in that talk, you know, what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
I tried to give you the whole panorama of how the shift from the great mother to the great father was an enormous change, and we haven't come out of that wound yet. We haven't got the marriage. And that's why the feminine principle has been, and why women have been so diminished in relation to men for so long, and why they've had to fight their way back, so to speak, since the suffragettes, and, you know, each step of the way they had to fight. And it's still not understood, because nobody knows the history of this. If they understood the history, it would be so much clearer.
Anne, why did you take on do you see this as a kind of a crusade that you're doing for all of, you know, feminine kind?
No, I'm doing it for both. I'm doing it for men and women, because what happened with this change was that the feminine aspect of men's nature was devalued, just as women were devalued. And in women, the masculine side of her nature, which was a critical inner voice sort of thing, took precedence over her true feminine nature, so she couldn't be the whole person that she was or is. So it's not exactly a crusade. It's a teaching commission, if you like. It's a teaching commission given me from on high that this is my work in this life.
It is absolutely fascinating. And the one thing that a lot of people, and I think this is important to say, is that as you're mentioning the amount of grief that womankind are feeling from what has been essentially taken from them back in history, we always seem to equate grief with just the loss of a loved one, and don't look at how grief actually impacts us from history, from the past to the present day. Can you talk a little bit about how this grief has impacted women from then until now, and what is... Why are we, I don't know, are we seeing a change in it? I don't know. Are we, or are we moving, are we still stuck in the same thought processes, or are we actually seeing a change for women now?
I think we're seeing a tremendous change in, say, from my mother's generation to my generation, a huge change. I'm able to speak the way she couldn't speak, first of all, because of the internet, and secondly, because she was would have been much too shy and frightened to speak in public. Whereas I'm not in the least bit frightened. I love speaking in public. And that is a big change. So women have got more confident now, and many women are entering into politics, into government, into economics, into every kind of thing that you can think of, really. So there is a big change, but it's an unconscious change. It's unconscious because people don't know the history of what has made them what they are. And they certainly don't know the history of what their grandmothers went through and their great-grandmothers. Whereas I know back to my grandmother also what she went through, although she was very feisty. But there was no platform where she could speak. If she'd got up in the marketplace, everybody would say, oh, who is this crazy woman? Let's get rid of her, sort of thing. So there was no opportunity for women to speak. Occasionally, you got someone like Eleanor Roosevelt, who had a great influence in the war, that sort of thing. And you had great queens in the past, but that was it. And you had Florence Nightingale. She was a pioneer in nursing. That sort of woman made tremendous strides for other women. And because of them, things did change. But they've got a long way to go still. And also the long way for men to connect with the feminine aspect of their own nature so that they don't look down on it and despise their feelings as being sort of auxiliary things. So I'm not going to pay any attention to my feelings. I'm just going to shut them up, so to speak. But men are getting much better at relating to their feelings. And there's been a huge change in the way men are involved in bringing up children. Huge change from my father's generation, say, in the 1940s, when he would barely speak to children, or except to scold them and say they've been naughty or something. But no real physical expression of love from fathers to the children at that time, particularly from my background, was upper-class background. Men just didn't express their feelings. So there has been an enormous change, but it's got a long way to go. Because I'd like to also bring up the subject of the suffering of women and mothers, particularly losing their sons in war, and the fact that we still live in a warlike culture, which is always preparing for new wars and always losing, tragically, young men who have just reached their manhood in aged 18 to 20, and they're suddenly cut down and their lives are stopped just like that. Nobody thinks about that, and it infuriates me that governments just go ahead sending these young men off to war without realizing the terrible, terrible cost both to them and to their mothers and grandmothers in particular, who have brought them up, because they're the ones who've been mostly connected with bringing them up and feeding them every day, giving them food. And suddenly that young life is gone. And I couldn't bear the loss of my grandmother.
That's fascinating, Anne, because I'm ex-military, so I have a very dear connection to the military. And in my work as a medium, I have sat with many mothers who have lost their sons and daughters to war. And what you're saying is so powerful, because in every one of those sittings or every one of those private time that I have with them, the most underlying fear that they have is they're not being listened to, and that nobody considers just sending their son or their daughter to a war zone. They don't understand that their grieving starts the minute they're told they're going to war, or the minute they're told that they're even joining the military. It's not something that happens just after. It starts. It starts then.
It would start with me. If my grandson was called up, it would start then, and I would do everything to keep him in agricultural work where he might be safe, because I don't think it's noble to go to war. I think it's an atrocity that we need to sacrifice life on that scale. Still, after 4,000 years, we've had four wars for 4,000 years, and we're still going at it, as if we're going to go on forever with it. It's just insane when you look at it that way. As a psychotherapist, it's a psychosis.
It is.
I feel very strongly. I tried to start a whole movement last year to getting together with men, women and grandmothers, mothers and grandmothers, but I didn't have the technology to know how to do that. So it didn't really come to anything. But it started last May with a friend of mine in America, and we got some way with speaking and everything, but we didn't. I wanted to create a huge movement of mothers all over the world and grandmothers all over the world, from every culture and background and every group,
wow,
every religion, to just say we have to stop war now.
You know, I would.
It's on my website.
I honestly don't think there's anybody that wouldn't support that, because it's people at the top. And it's driven by power and greed, and they just send people to war. Now, I know that we need to, you know, coming from a military background, we need to protect ourselves, etc. But how far do we take it? I've lost a lot of friends who have been in the military that have lost their lives. I know people that I've sat with here, veterans who have lost their brothers or sisters. And it's always just the wrong decisions. It's always like they can't find any spiritual foundation or common ground. And the old saying, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, I think sometimes can be an excuse, because I think there's a massive disconnect between our divinity and our material world. And I think that's where
that's the problem.
We're disconnected between divinity and the material world, and we just live in a constant state of anguish and grief of what's to come next. So I think the movement idea that you have is phenomenal. It's a shame that you never got that going, because it sounds like it would be something really powerful.
Well, I might be able to, because there was a young man listening to the same talk that you listened to, who a young man in his 20s, who said he would like to help me, and he has the technological know-how to do that. I don't have the technological know-how to set up a thing, because I don't belong to Facebook or WhatsApp or any of the social media things at all, because I haven't got time. And also, I don't want to open myself to being attacked by people who I don't know or whatever for my ideas. So that's all shut off. So we'll see what I said when I finish this book to him. That's hopefully the end of May. He come back to me and we'll see what can be worked together, that something we might be able to do. But I do feel war is an addiction. It's in the male psyche as an addiction. And it's there is in a sense of males bonding together to fight the enemy. And this is so deep in the psyche. It comes from the survival instincts, the deepest survival instincts. It's very understandable, but it's still an addiction and a psychosis, because killing people is a psychosis. Killing people en masse, whatever, whether you're doing it with a sword or with bombs or with drones or whatever, it is against the law of life. And we've forgotten that. We were told that right at the beginning of Genesis, but we've completely forgotten. And so we call ourselves Christian or Muslim or Jewish, but we kill with no compunction when the occasion seems to trigger the survival instincts. And then we, with revenge or hatred or desire for punishing the other, we start on war, and also to protect ourselves, which you said quite rightly. There are times, like with the Second World War, where we had to do something to stop Hitler. And it looks as if we have to do something to stop Putin, but it may not be exactly the same situation, because there is also the aggression on our side, because we've set up a situation of opposition, so to speak, instead of being able to see other people as brothers and sisters belonging to one great whole. We see them as separate, and therefore we can kill them and dispense with their lives, and etc. It's all what you just said. It's all because we've lost touch with the transcendent, which in the Kabbalistic tradition is called the below becoming separated from the above, so that we no longer have the whole. We've separated God from matter, and that was the big mistake we made in the patriarchal religions for a couple of thousand years now. We've been going on the wrong track, because when we got rid of the goddess, we got rid of nature and the connection with nature and the sacredness of nature and the sacredness of the human being. All that went when you had the God up in heaven and matter down below, the material realm down below. Am I talking too much?
No, absolutely. I'm fascinated. Just keep going. I'm just going to ask you actually about is there a chance, which we may be too far down, because I see that we have division everywhere. We have division in color. We have division in religion. I've always maintained that, you know, for those of us that inhabit the earth, we are merely stewards of the earth. We don't own it. We don't own any land. We own nothing. It belongs to the divine and the creating force that created everything. So we've created this division. By creating distance from our feminine power, or for a feminine understanding, or even the ideological idea of a feminine goddess, do you feel if we bring that back in, that there's a possibility to bring balance back into that which is out of balance?
I don't think so. I think it's too late for that. I think we have to understand the feminine in a different way, which is to do with love of creation, love of our fellow human beings. And that would be enough. You don't need a goddess being married to a god. You can have that if you're a theologian and you want to think in those terms. but you don't need it as a human being. You simply have to understand that the whole of the planet is sacred and that life is sacred. That's the two things that we have to learn, and that nobody is outside that. Even the most evil people among us who are plotting our downfall, and by that I don't mean Putin, I mean other people who are trying to take over the planet and manage it the way they want to do it. Even they, although I would consider them to be doing evil, nevertheless, they are contained within the whole divinity or the sacredness of what we are, really. So you can't exclude anybody from that.
Beyond this podcast, my work involves delivering thought-provoking talks and workshops which are deeply rooted in my experience and extensive research. My objective is to bring a profound understanding of grief to your organization, turning adversity into strength, resilience, and growth. I can help you forge a compassionate and supportive environment that encourages emotional resilience. We will create sustainable solutions for managing grief and loss. Understanding grief isn't a luxury, it's a necessity, a fundamental aspect of our human experience that directly impacts our work lives. As leaders, your comprehension and management of grief can be transformational for your organization. I invite you to collaborate with me on this journey. Contact me at jockbrokers.com. You're a Jungian analyst. You've studied Carl Jung's work for many, many years. And he talks a great deal about the shadow aspect of it, which I guess also has a connection to grief and how women or how mothers, how anybody grieves, really. But do you feel that this shadow nature is prevalent in a universal, not say universal consciousness, but in the earth? But there's a shadow element to the earth that is needed. So some of these negative things that happen, such as atrocities, wars, or anything else, from a Jungian point of view, is it something that is needed that is integrated for us to evolve and move forward?
I don't think it's needed. I think it's something that has happened quite unconsciously that we've got stuck in. And that is where the Gnostic myth is so helpful, because it says that we are unaware of what's happened to us, and therefore we can't improve things, we can't change it, because we haven't got the awareness of what needs to change. It's quite subtle. But I like that. I've just been working on it today for this chapter, so it's just fresh in my mind. But I don't think that any radical change in the archetypal imagery will affect the change. The whole shadow aspect is what we have done in our ignorance and what we're doing now. For instance, to give you one example, very clear example, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of things called gain-of-function laboratories all over the world, in which scientists are manipulating pathogens in order to create new and more devastating viruses, which they then say they are going to work on the antidote to them. But they don't see that in working on creating the dark side or the killing side, that it's useless to work on the healing side. Why not just give up working on the dark side? But they're so gripped by this, they are completely possessed by the shadow. That's what Jung meant. They're completely possessed by the survival instinct and the power complex, which says, if we don't do this, something terrible might happen. Therefore, we will work with these pathogens to create some devastating virus, which will wipe out half the human race. And then we can work to create the antidote to it. It's so ludicrous. But they don't see the insanity of it. And it is insane what they're doing. Absolutely insane.
It is insanity because...
And that is shadow. That is a very good example of shadow.
That's an amazing example of shadow.
We all have the tendency. Yeah. And if we all have the tendency to want to protect ourselves, which is absolutely natural, but you don't take it to the length of undermining the whole human situation with what you're doing, thinking that you're looking after yourself. That's where the divisions come in, like you just said, that we've divided ourselves into different nations and different colors and different religions. And all that was quite unnecessary. We're simply human beings on this planet trying to find a way of understanding why we're here and what we're supposed to be doing when we're here. And it's certainly not creating terrible viruses.
It makes you wonder what is the end goal of these people that are working, that are really stuck in the shadow, stuck in the negative nature of consciousness or the universe. What is their end goal? I mean, they create another disease, they create another... What is the point of it? That's the thing. What do they get out of it?
No, the goal is power.
That's it, power.
The goal is power.
And then what after that? Because they can't... Like Putin and all the... Even Hitler or no matter who in life, even back in history... What comes after them? So what? They get power. They can't live. You know, they're not going to live in the material world forever. They're going to pass over. And what is it for?
I know they have to go.
They don't.
Well, their idea now is to create artificial intelligence and implant it in themselves, which will give them immortality. So they think that is the shadow side of AI technology. There's a good side as well, but the shadow side is making yourselves immortal, which is really acting as God, saying that you can overcome death. We're going to outwit God, and we're going to overcome the fact that we have to die. And the other thing, Jacques, that would be so important, which I think your audience already knows, is that we are immortal beings. We don't die when the physical body dies. Our consciousness goes on. And if people knew that, including these power-obsessed people, they wouldn't be so anxious to create these terrible things. They would be more relaxed about what life is about, and they would enjoy it more instead of being driven by power and greed. Greed comes into it, greed for money, because colossal sums of money were made out of the vaccines that we all were subjected to.
It was a crazy amount what was made to the cost of people's lives and people's suffering.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And the whole vaccine thing was a bioweapon. And I can say that quite clearly. And I'm just reading the book by Robert Kennedy called The Wuhan Cover-Up. And he goes just minutely tracing what happened from a long time ago up to the present day, chapter by chapter. It's a horrifying, horrifying story about the shadow gripping America, the deep state, and how it's totally driven by greed.
Yeah, that's a book I should listen to. Listen to it on Audible or read as well. You're not the first person who's mentioned that book to me either.
Well, I would get it and just look at it. You don't have to read everything, but you can get the gist of it. And I'm taking about 2 months to read it, because chapter by chapter it's so interesting.
Wow.
And the other person to listen to is somebody called Dr. David Martin, which your listeners may know about him as well. He is an extraordinary man who gave an address to the European Union last May, in which he said that this whole development of the so-called virus was planned as far back as 1965. It was a deliberate plan to create something deadly, which would then need a vaccine, and which would produce vaccines which would kill more people. The virus created, the bioweapon would kill a certain number, but then the vaccinations would kill more and maim or damage them, their immune systems and things. I mean, it's a horrific scenario.
Yeah.
And the aim behind it was to reduce the population on the planet.
Not one consideration of the suffering that has been caught, the grief, that has been inflicted upon people.
The grief and the suffering. And it needs people to come together. Everybody who has lost somebody needs to get together with everybody else and just make up one big mass of people who say, never again, and we've had enough. And these terrible gain-of-function laboratories must be closed down, which actually Dr. David Martin called for that. He said these must be closed down immediately. And all this research just stopped. I would like to be in a position of power, I must say, because there's so much.
There's so much that you would like to change,
if you could change, you would change
straight away.
As citizens of this world, to improve things and to help people and to really spread the gospel of love, if you like.
Yeah.
to overcome this dark shadow business which we've got involved
It reminded me of the biblical story of Moses, the firstborn, and the Passover, when this unknown force came over and took their first sons. And I've helped a lot of people that have lost loved ones through the COVID, the COVID time, and that's the best analogy I can give, is that these mothers, husbands that have lost, and the wives that are left behind, it is almost like this biblical reckoning. Very similar to the Passover, where this unknown force come over and took their loved one, took their firstborn, took their loved one, that kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things that I've noted that is different in their grief journey. It's a different type of grief. It's a grief that is really unknown, and that has affected all of humanity in every corner of the globe. And those that are at the top of it don't get it. They just don't get it. They don't see what they've done.
They don't get it because they haven't got a developed feeling function. That's dead. They're all up in the mind, and the heart is completely closed down. And that's why they don't get it. And that's the lack of the feminine principle, because the feminine principle is about the heart and the capacity to feel compassion, to feel love, to feel relationship. All that is the feminine principle. And we've got stuck in the mind, thanks to scientific materialism, which has been going for about 300 years now, with the fading of Christianity. Scientific materialism got a grip on all the academic sort of side of life in the universities and the schools, so that they haven't had any teaching about the existence of the transcendent. They only know material reality. And that is that the mind, particularly the left hemisphere of the brain, has taken over and shut down the right hemisphere, which is the imaginative, creative side, which is connected to the heart. Even in the embryo, it's connected to the heart. So this is what's happened. Once we know what's happened, we can begin to do something about it. And we can, for instance, if they call for another, say, oh, another terrible virus is coming, if the WHO says that, we just can say, to hell with you. You just shut up, and you're not going to mesmerize us with fear again, because fear is the great power of government.
And in actual fact, that's what they're saying. There's a lot of these scientists are saying, yeah, there's another virus coming, there's another this coming, and I think the world is just not ready for it. We don't want it anymore, and it's a crazy situation, and it is coming from the whole materialist perspective.
Yeah, it is, completely. It's, if you can just stick a pin into the body, the body will do what you want it to do. It's complete control over the body, and that is quite wrong, because the body has a wonderful immune system, and people need to be taught that, and it can resist these things. But we need to say no to another vaccination program, another virus. You just say, stuff it,
Well, I'm very proud, Anne, that when my wife and I got COVID, it was rough. We were told by the other side that we were going to get it, and it was necessity. And whoever's listening out there, you've heard me say it before, I'm quite proud of the fact that we never took anything. We never put any jabs in our arms. We didn't believe in it. We believed in the power, our divine power and our divine authority. And we meditated, we prayed, we sat in the sun, and literally we allowed our spirit to heal our bodies.
Well, there you are. But if only people knew that and trusted it, because you have to trust it, and you have to not be afraid. That's the main thing. Not let fear, because fear is the strongest thing which weakens the immune system. It actually, the very emotion, fear, weakens the physical immune system.
Absolutely.
Which is so sad, really.
I think that's another aspect for women and the feminine. And it's really nice to you to talk about the feminine principle, not just from just a female's point of view, but the feminine principle that brings in compassion and kindness and love, and it is for every man, woman, and child, essentially. And I think to bring that more, I want to I think it's very unique to bring that principle in to a grief concept for everyone, man, woman, child, everybody, because then we are able to integrate grief into our life as a natural something that we go through as part of our journey, but we can integrate it in a more positive way. I've always said it can be your greatest nemesis or your greatest teacher. And I think this whole feminine principle is a wonderful...
The late Queen of England said, you can't have love without grief. And that goes, you know, it goes together. If you love people, you will feel sad when they're either hurt or when they've gone, when they've passed over to the next world. And I think so much could be people could be helped if they understood that they go on after the death of the body, that they go to another dimension of the universe, which you probably know more about than I do. I was brought up on channeled messages that my mother received.
Wow.
With a friend. So I knew about the existence of the transcendent. You know, I knew that there was another world from the age of 13, and that really guided my whole life. I never lost that absolute certainty that we are guided and loved by the other dimension, and that we have come here for a purpose, that we have to find what our life purpose is. You've obviously found yours, and I found mine. And if people knew that they had a life purpose, it would help them so much. And it may be simply loving your dog or your cat, as simple as that. It doesn't have to be some great enterprise.
No, actually, I've said to many times that life purposes can change. And you have one life purpose, but you may have many life purposes. You may have a life purpose as a mother. You may have a life purpose as a wife. And you may have a life purpose. And all of that is your life purpose. It's in, it's collective. Your life purpose can be a number of subjects, but collective.
You're absolutely right. So that people don't have to feel that they're unworthy or that they haven't achieved anything. They don't have to achieve anything other than to love themselves, basically, and then to love other people as well. But you start with accepting yourself as you are, doing the best you can, and then giving what you are to other people.
Absolutely. I love that you can identify and pinpoint the problem with materialism, and that has created our disconnection as well. But I think there's hope, because I did a podcast yesterday. I just released it today, actually. I did a great interview with Laurel Waterman, who you know is part of the LF Trust as well, as part of the faculty and is the Science Medical Network. And it was great because she came on this very same show because she was a materialist. She believed that just exactly what you're saying, the material world, that the foundation of everything was based in the brain, was material. And it took the grief of losing her partner, but then experiencing the transcendent that blew, and experiencing it from a feminine principle that blew everything out the water for her and totally changed her materialist perspective because she experienced the transcendent. And I think we need more experience of the transcendent in our lives. And we need to have less fear of it. And perhaps your books and your education and your teaching and the historical angle that you have can sow seeds of that transcendent in everyone.
I hope so. That's what I really do hope. I think my last book, The Dream of the Cosmos, has done that, because I get feedback from people who read it and from many men who've read it thanking me for it, because it's enabled them to see things in a different way and a different perspective. And it's put them in touch with the transcendent, which isn't, you see, we've been taught so many wrong things. We've been taught that God is up there far away in heaven, when really God is everything that we are and everything that the life is, every blade of grass, every bird cheeping, all that is God. And we've been taught all this wrong thing about spirituality being up there and getting rid of the sacredness of every aspect of life, which was what the ancient Greeks knew. They understood that everything was sacred. And we've completely lost that. And that is the tragedy of our condition. We're milling around in complete blindness and misinformation really for a very long time about what life's about. And therefore, we've missed the boat because we're here on this planet, first of all, to experience what we're given to experience, but secondly, to contribute to the evolution of humanity on the planet. We have a task and a mission, if you like. There's a wonderful book on this, which I would recommend, which is called LSD and the Mind of the Universe. LSD and the Mind of the Universe, wow, by a friend of mine called Christopher Bache. And it goes, he took a psychedelic substance over 20 years, and it's the record of what he experienced during those 20 years and how he was guided stage by stage into a deeper and deeper understanding of the mind of the universe. I would call it the soul of the universe, whom he calls the beloved. It's obviously a feminine being.
I'm going to get that
because it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. And I'm also going to get your book because I have to admit I haven't read any of your books yet, but as they've been recommended to me by LF, I certainly will be reading them and I will be jumping into some of that stuff. And your next book, let's talk a little bit about your next book that you're working on. Where is that going?
You can see all my books on my website. Well, the book I'm working on, it's about the, I call it the divine wisdom and the Holy Spirit, the lost feminine aspect of God, the lost feminine aspect of God. So it's divine wisdom and the Holy Spirit, the lost feminine aspect of God. And I'm three quarters of the way through it. I'm just on the chapter of the Gnostics, and also the next chapter is on the Essenes. Jesus was an Essene teacher. And so
people
was Mary
don't realize
Magdalene.
That.
Both of them were Essene teachers.
Yeah, and they don't realize that.
No, they don't know because nobody knows anything about these things.
No, I've always maintained, actually, I've always maintained.
As best I can before I pass on to the next world, and I hope I have a little bit more time.
Well, I think you've still got a long way to go. It seems to be that you could be writing books right up into your centennial years. You could be one of our centennials. And still teaching. And I think your work is absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to read your book. And also, if our organization can help you in any way with what you want to do with grandmothers and grief and things, then I have a media organization out here in America. I'm also the founder of Paranormal Daily News. I have quite a big media network. So if we can help you in any way,
that would be wonderful. I think, Jock, it would be wonderful to know that there could be somebody who could help.
I would love to, and I'm also the head of a non-profit which is about parapsychology and spirituality, etc. So if I can lend a hand to helping you get that dream into reality, I would be delighted to do that.
Okay, that would be really wonderful. Because I do want to reach out to women because of this
stuff.
Oh, I think
so. I think it's a necessity, and I do a lot of teaching and education for men, especially in grief. But it's interesting because what your lecture has taught me and what I've learned from you from studying what you have with Aleph was that we need more of the feminine principle in. To give men permission to grieve and to bring balance to their masculine and feminine side, and I'll probably feature that more because I tell them all the time it's okay to express and to grieve and to cry and to, but it really what it means is we need to come to we need to basically come to balance and harmony with our own feminine principle within our own being.
Yes, because when you look back what men have suffered, having to sacrifice their lives continually in wars for thousands of years and with no one to sort of say, I don't want to do this, I don't want my life to go. They had to repress all those feelings of grief and being abandoned and being forced to sign up to be, you know, be a soldier or whatever. There was great nobility in that, tremendous nobility. But at the same time, with that sacrifice, there was terrible, terrible grief. And that will have been carried over to the other world. And then when they come back in their next life, that grief will still be possibly be there. That's another aspect that we need to think about. And that comes up very much in the book that I recommended, yeah, the LSD and the Mind of the Universe, because what he experienced then was the terrible suffering of humanity for these thousands and thousands of years with no way of telling anyone about it. What was being done to them.
That's fascinating. That's not something even I've considered. I know that we can, you know, through all my work and my research over the years and working in grief, I need to look at the grief that people bring from other, you know, their past lives and
other lives.
Not something that I've deeply taken root into. I think I need to do that more. So thank you for that, because that's something that I think is fascinating, and I think it's very poignant that they would bring that suffering in. And because I think some of the greatest proof of the afterlife is proof of reincarnation, is the reincarnated, the past lives. I think as NDEs, you know, is very subjective, but the empirical evidence that we get from past lives is phenomenal, and it is probably some of the strongest. It is some of the strongest. So, and there is a deep, deep, deep aspect to grief that they bring in with them, and that's something to actually have a look at as well. So that's fascinating.
And also there's another aspect. There's another aspect, Jock. The people that these soldiers have killed, that needs to be absolved, that guilt. And it has there is a psychologist, I can't remember his name, who's actually done the work with somebody who came to him with terrible guilt. And he was able to meet the person he'd killed in the other world, who said to him, "Don't feel guilty, because it had to be, and we were both engaged in this battle. I was killed and you weren't, but don't feel guilty or badly about it, because I'm okay where I am. I'm moving on." And that healed the wound with the person who'd done the killing, so that he no longer felt the grief of guilt.
Wow, that's true. That's fascinating. I'd like to research him a bit more. If you ever get his name, you know, email it to me, because I'd like to research that.
I can get his name. I've got his book in my library. I will send it to you. I've got his book in my library.
Wow. And yeah, it's
very interesting.
It's been absolutely fascinating. We're coming up to the end of the hour, but it's gone so quickly, and I could keep going and keep going. But I want to get you back on again and talk more. And also I want to get you on Deadly Departed, which is the other podcast we have for Paranormal Daily News. I think your work's fascinating, and if I can promote it out there to a wider community, I want to do it.
Thank you very much.
Is there a final message you have for people who are listening to this?
I would say love your life. Yeah, the final message is to love yourselves and love life, and realize that life is sacred, and it's a sacred opportunity for us to be here living it and getting to know all the things that we're getting to know and the people that we're getting to know. And trust, that's the thing, trust instead of fear. That's my message.
That is beautiful. Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you
for being with me. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and your books.
It was a great, great pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. Well, they can go to my website and they'll see a summary of my book, The Dream of the Cosmos, there. It's in 12 sections, so they can read through the sections and see what the book's all about if they don't want to buy it. It's called The Dream of the Cosmos, A Quest for the Soul. And I've also got a book of channeled messages from my mother, which is called Messages from the Transcendent, which is I published last July, which is available on both of them are on Amazon. And I think that would be enough to go on with.
Fantastic. And thank you so much for being with us on Pillars of Grief. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I could have went on for ages. There's so much to unpack. But I think the greatest lesson that you can learn from this is just listen to the words of what Anne has said, Dr. Anne Barron, and go and check out our website, annebarron.com. Read the books. I certainly will be reading the books as well. And if you've got any questions, and get back to us. And remember that without the feminine, we are nothing. And without the masculine, we are nothing. We need a balance of both. ladies and gentlemen, and maybe we can make this world a better place. Anne, thank you once again for being with me.
Thank you.
Will be connecting with you again soon. God bless. Thank you for tuning in to the Pillars of Grief with me. If you've found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Also, leaving a review can help others find the show and receive the guidance they need on their journey through grief. I appreciate your feedback and look forward to hearing from you all. Join my free online support community for those grieving and connect with others who understand what you're going through. I offer you a spiritual blessing and hope you will join me on the next episode. Till then, open your mind and allow the power of the divine to transform your grief to spiritual realization. God bless.